This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
No matter how strong, I'm gonna take you down with one little stone.
When Rufus Wainwright started making records in the late 90s, he was unlike anyone else out there. His songs were as much turn of the 20th century as they were turn of the 21st, sung in his vibrato-y tenor, full of drama and brutally, personally honest.
Dinner at 8 was okay before the toast full of blues. It was great until those old magazines got us started up again.
And he was one of the first gay pop stars to sing completely openly about his sexuality. Wainwright has been drenched in music his entire life. He's the son of the folk singers Kate McGarrigle and Loudon Wainwright. Now 40, he has made seven solo albums, set Shakespeare's sonnets to music, written an opera, and he has just released a best-of collection called Vibrate, the best of Rufus Wainwright. Sir?
Yes.
Welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
As we've said, you come from this impressive musical dynasty, your
yes.
father, your mother, your sister,
yes.
your aunts, your cousins.
Yes.
Leonard Cohen is
yes.
the grandfather of your daughter.
Yes, yes.
You're like, I don't know, what are you like? You're like the Cashes and Carters or the Kennedys or the Bushes or something.
Well, I mean, yes, to a degree. We don't have the cash of the Bushes.
Yeah.
We probably have the cash of the Kennedys, considering there's so many of
yeah.
them.
yeah.
But
has that been – I mean, one can imagine all the good things
yeah.
about that. But is it like a equally balanced good and bad side of that thing?
Well, it's just the way it is. You know, my parents were very – well, especially my mother was certainly dynastic when she met my dad. I mean, she
really thought of it in that
oh,
way.
Oh, yeah. No, her thing was when she met my dad, she was like, that's going to be the father of my kids. I mean, she was really drawn
to
him.
So it really was like June Carter and Johnny
Cash.
On
a visceral – yeah, she saw him on stage
yeah.
and then he saw her perform. And it was there was this real mutual fascination with their artistry and their talent. And then sadly, that – kind of fascination became intense jealousy, and it was kind of a fascinating folk breakup. But I don't know. I was born into that, and along with, you know, songs written about either their relationship or myself or my sister. I mean, it was all laid out.
And
then we had other friends who were similar.
Right.
You know, with like Richard and Linda Thompson, and
that didn't work out
and the Seegers and
yeah.
stuff. So it's not common, but it's also not unusual.
May we hear a song?
Sure.
Going to a Town?
Okay, here we go.
Alrighty.
I'm going to a place that has already been disgraced. I'm gonna see some folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America. I'm gonna make it up for all of the Sundays. I'm gonna make it up for all of the nursery rhymes that never really seem to want to tell the truth. I'm so tired of you, America, making my own way home. really need to know. I may just never see you again. I might as well. You took advantage of a world that loved you well. I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm so tired of you.
That was Rufus Wainwright performing Going to a Town. One of the sources of the power of that song, it seems to me, is instead of being some whiny, scratchy, folk singery sounding person singing such a song, you have this beautiful, classically gorgeous voice singing. The combination of that with this holy cow kind of negativism is it gives it real power.
Yeah, well, it's a nice – I mean, it is – that song especially is a nice – sort of hybrid of both, you know, the classic protest song and an operatic aria, you know. I try to kind of meld them into one.
As we've said, as you just mentioned, you come from both this folk pop background and have been influenced by opera, one of your big passions since you were a kid. Has opera influenced your music?
Oh, very much so. No, I mean, when I was about 13 years old, I first became obsessed with opera. It was after listening to a recording of Verdi's Requiem. And it was an instantaneous, transformative experience where I transfixified. and that's all I could listen to for a good, you know, 10 years, really. So
your adolescence was spent in opera.
It was totally operatic.
You've written one opera, Prima Donna. You're working on another.
Yes.
And this next one you're doing is about the Roman Emperor Hadrian.
Yes, it is Hadrian and Antoninus.
It's one of the good emperors.
Yes, one of the good emperors.
And one of the gay emperors.
Well, one of the really gay emperors. I mean, I think every emperor probably had their dalliances with
that. Was part of loving Greece.
Yeah, but I think what's interesting about the story of Hadrian is that he was actually in love with Antoninus, who was another man. And he was persecuted for it. I mean, it was – and a lot of the same kind of problems that exist today with homophobia and so forth were very much present back then.
That sounds like a great timely, dare I say it, commercial idea.
Yeah. No, it is. It is an empire and, you know, Hadrian's Wall. And Hadrian invented he created Palestine.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those borders that he initially drew, we still fight over today. So it's kind of a fascinating story in that sense.
In the past, you've talked about how your parents could both deal with personal issues on stage through their music.
Yes.
But not so much in real life. Is that something that you share with them, that it's easier for you to sing emotional lyrics in public than say privately to a person, this is what I'm feeling about you?
There's people in my life with whom that's the case. Not all, but there are. One thing that I will say, though, is, and this is something that occurred to me several years ago during my Saturn return, meaning when I was around 27, and I was a little, you know, foggy and mixed up
and druggy
and weird, is that, you know, I did realize that artistry and poetry will not save your life if your life needs to be saved. I mean, there's a point when you have to kind of get off the trolley ride and, you know, go see a therapist and, you know, take care of yourself. And,
yeah.
And has nothing to do with art. And I think that can actually be a bit of a trap early on for a lot of musicians and so forth.
Well, and the other part of that is thinking that your misery in life is nothing but good for your art.
Yeah, no, I know. I would say that misery does help at time with songwriting, but you have to be – you have to be have the energy to write the songs, you know. So,
yeah.
But as I found out, you know, life was no matter what state you're in or what's going on, you will always be served your fair share of misery,
yes.
No matter what.
And now that you've been a father for a few years,
yeah.
Has it changed your regard for your father?
Yes, it has. I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, my dad. The other day, I went for a walk with him around the reservoir. Up in Central Park, and at the end of the walk, my daughter's three now, and she's at that age where, you know, you're going to get a kiss sometimes, and sometimes you're not going to get a kiss, and you're going to, and but then when she does shine her light on you and says, "Daddy, I love you," there's a nuclear reaction, you know, that occurs. So, but anyways, I was walking around with my dad, and I, you know, got to the end of the walk, and I hugged him, and I said, "Dad, I just want to tell you that I love you, because now I know how great that makes you feel when your kid says that." And so I felt it necessary to kind of impart that to him, because I'm now, you know, begging for it.
Yes, exactly. you've said many times, talking about your coming out, which you did
yeah.
very, very young, realizing
yeah.
you were gay, that your parents were not so cool with this.
Yeah.
And here, which is so strange to me, these bohemian
yeah.
countercultural
yeah.
types. And it's
yeah.
the late 80s,
yeah, called,
the 90s.
It's called the Cher syndrome.
speaking of Cher
yeah.
and her trans
yeah,
daughter
and
son.
Yeah, I mean, she was famously somewhat.
Yeah.
Difficult,
but you're but
and one would think that Cher would
you would think,
know
but she's Cher. Your parents are these hippies.
Well, Cher was somewhat hippie-ish.
She was back
say.
In the day.
Come on.
Yes, right. Were you surprised?
You know, it's so hard for me because there's this one wild card, which is that all of this took place in 1987, and at that point, you know, AIDS was just everywhere, and to be gay was essentially a death sentence.
And you, yeah, and so as a parent,
and
you think, my kid is going to.
Yeah, and I was very, very young too. I was 14. So,
yeah.
So I don't think it's fair to really judge. That being said, for anyone who's out there whose parents are not equipped, let's say, to deal with it, I'm an example of someone who, you know, made it through.
And it's not just conventionally, stereotypically bigoted people who
yeah,
can't deal
yeah,
with
yeah, yeah, no. It's I think it's once it's your own kid, it's a whole other story.
Can you imagine your own daughter declaring herself X, Y, or Z, something that would freak you out?
Probably. I don't know. I want to say an attorney, but I quite like my attorney, so
yeah.
So I don't want to be mean.
your mother raised you. You were extremely close to her. Is there like a most important lesson about either being an artist or a human being that she taught you?
Well, the thing that was most important that my mother taught me is to always make sure to lay down the arms, you know, whenever you after a battle. Probably because for her, she wasn't able to let go of some anger herself.
Huh.
She really felt it necessary to imbue it into her children, that quality. And I think that meant a lot to her.
And was that not letting go of anger and bitterness professionally as well as personally in her case?
Well, yeah, both. I mean, both. I mean, she was very, very kind of haunted almost by her talent. And because she didn't make it and because she had to kind of retreat to Canada with her kids, I mean, there was a lot of disappointment there.
Yeah. But we've all heard of her, so she
yeah,
didn't not
yeah,
make
no,
it.
Yeah, I know. But she wasn't, you know, Bonnie Raitt or,
right.
you know, who she knew and loved, or Carole King or whatever. I mean, there was... She wasn't quite
or
that.
Or the Canadians.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The fellow Canadians.
Yeah, or Joni Mitchell for that reason. But in a strange way, I feel that also gave their music this other quality, which there's a certain darkness there, a certain depth, a kind of perspective of the outsider that she put in her work, which makes it so, I don't know, timeless. We all feel basically abandoned. It's great.
And there are a lot of incredibly successful superstars who then have to force the idea of soul.
I mean, I think the whole thing was, I mean, I love Carly Simon, and we knew her quite a bit growing up. We would see her occasionally when we go down to Martha's Vineyard. But there was this thing of like, you know, my mom would be writing about, you know, mashed potatoes and bringing up a teenage daughter and kind of like being alone in the dark in her room, turning on and off light switches. And meanwhile, Carly would be like, do I look great in this dress? And I'm making love tonight to some guy on the wharf. You know, and my mom was always like, oh, God. I mean, she was always great, but there was something. But she wouldn't go, she couldn't write this kind of fluffy, which, I mean, I admire about Carly. Here, I hope Carly doesn't hear this. But she was never able to sort of just play that game of I'm going to write a sexy love song that people are going to want to hear on the radio.
Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of Bronte angle.
Yes. Before you go, will you play another of your songs?
Sure.
And this is The Art Teacher?
Yes.
Great.
Tell him it was him. Oh, I wish I could tell him. Oh, I wish I could have told him. I looked at the Rubens and Rembrandts. He told me he liked
That's Rufus Wainwright playing the art teacher. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rufus Wainwright's new album is called Vibrate, the best of Rufus Wainwright.